They are exchanging punches.
The Instigators.
No, they didn't.
His did.
My memories of Vancouver, boys. October 20th, 2003. Standing in the tunnel, Marty. It's all rink out. Or it's all dark out in the rink.
Yeah.
And this is playing. This is the Vancouver
Canucks. Where the streets have no names?
Intro. Wait for it. Wait for it. So I'm standing in the tunnel, and I have goosebumps, and I'm leaning over on my stick, right? And I'm just thinking, like, oh, what it would be like to, you know. And then I said, you know, I'm thinking to myself, don't get knocked out. I could get knocked out tonight. So that took the wind right out of the sails. But my point is that just for one second, I wish I could have been a star player in the league, because I would have gone out. I would have played the best game of my life here in this song. This is the most unbelievable intro. And I don't know if they still do it in Vancouver. But do you remember anything from this game, Marty? The game I'm talking about?
Not much. I'm actually looking at the scoreboard.
We lost 6-1.
I got an assist.
Well, let me talk about you.
And
allow me to talk. Allow me to pat you on the back.
Brad May got a 10-minute misconduct penalty at the end of the game for attempt to injure.
I remember that. He was with Vancouver at the time. Anyway, we lost 6-1.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember the game. I was -2. Played 5 minutes, 5:08 to be exact, 6 shifts. Not my brightest moment. Thought I was getting sent down after that one. However, you came in and replaced Mika Noronen after one period.
Yeah.
Right? Or you played
after
one period. You pick up an assist in the third on Miro Chetan's goal on a power play.
Yeah, well, it was me, Drury, and Chetan. We were a unit. We were a unit on the power play, and I set up Drury with a nice pass, and he set up Chetan, and that was in the back of the net.
Unreal opening. Thank you, Jeff Koltnack, for pulling that up.
I did not get in a fight with Matt Cook that game, but I remember a game in Vancouver where we got beat up 6-3 or something like that. One of those situations where I came in halfway in the game, I think, or something, and I went to the corner to play a puck. And Matt Cook and I used to always get into it when he was with Syracuse and I was with Rochester. So I went to the corner to play a puck, and I saw Matt Cook come in, and I knew he was going to take a run at me. So my follow-through kept on going very high.
Yeah.
And I came across his shoulder, and then he went down in the corner, and I jumped right on top of him, starting, like, punching Matt Cook. He got up. We started, like,
everybody.
But the best part is that I believe Felix Podvin was the goalie at the other end. And he skated all the way down, and he basically told me in French, and not so many words, you better stay in your net or I will kill you.
Yeah. I was...
And I was scared at that time.
I remember, just all I remember from that first game in Vancouver that I ever played, I remember we were down by so much, and I was lined up beside Brad May, who at the time was a legend, right? Very well-known fighter in the league, like toward the end of his time, tough as nails. And I asked him to fight, and he turned around and looked at Mark Crawford. And it was the first time I'd seen this, right? Like, I'm new to the NHL still. It's like my third game. And he looks back, he looks at Crawford, and he's like, what do you think? And Crawford's like, no, don't worry about it. And I'm like, that's crazy that the guy turns around and asks his coach.
Like Brad May has to ask his coach permission.
So I was kind of hoping that he wasn't going to be allowed.
Well, you know what? Let's get off the hockey part of it, and let's get a little culture. Vancouver, and this is just my opinion,
educate us.
Educate, yeah. So Vancouver was one of the most beautiful places in North America, with all the mountains and everything, and it's just a really gorgeous place to visit. That being said, one of my favorite nightlife spots,
the Roxy.
The Roxy, live band, live music, and that place was always rocking and rolling, which was absolutely incredible. But the other thing, I don't know where you guys went to eat every time you went to Vancouver, but the place that it was like a hidden gem. I used to go to this sushi place because obviously Vancouver is just legendary for sushi with all the fishing and stuff right off of the coast
there.
But we went to this sushi place, and I just remember sitting basically at this bar type area, with in front of me there was like a river of sushi that basically went around in this great big long snake.
Yes.
And it was all the sushi got pushed forward with this current.
It was on a belt?
It was on a belt.
It's a conveyor belt of sushi.
Of water current. And basically you would stop it. You'd take a couple off there and all of a sudden the sushi just kept on going around and around. It was absolutely genius. And the best place
I've ever
been.
Until you see the same piece of sushi going around for 4 hours and then you're kind of like, that one might be a little expired.
Petey, I'm going to tell you this.
There's not two pieces I know go around twice.
I'll tell you this right now. It is absolutely amazing. Just sitting there, you're just kind of like, wow, I've never been to a place like this that's had revolving like 1,000 different types of sushi coming through. So it was amazing. I just remember
that. I did like going to Vancouver.
Like, remember at the hotel? So
the Pan Pacific, I believe.
There's a bunch of hotels right there on the water in Vancouver. So on a clear day, you would see some of the mountains and whatnot. But you go to every hotel. It's like you go to New York City and you know there's going to be the city noise, the honking and the police and firemen going, and you're going to hear it. In Vancouver, it's the prop planes that are coming in and landing in the water next to the hotel to refuel and go back up. It was amazing. I'd sit there and watch planes after planes land in the water and take off.
I've got to tell you an amazing story. And I can't remember if this happened in San Jose or if it happened when I was playing here in Buffalo. But Montreal Canadiens stayed. Remember there in Vancouver, there's, I think, 3 or 4 great big huge high-rise hotels all basically beside each other. Yeah. So they're all... But the Montreal Canadiens stayed at the certain hotel for like the 10 or 12 years that I played in Montreal, okay?
The one where it's a $20 orange juice in the morning.
Here's the thing, yes. That is exactly true. But here's the thing. When I played for San Jose, they didn't stay in the same hotel as Montreal. Yeah. They stayed in a different hotel that was right beside it. And Buffalo was the same thing. We stayed at a different hotel than the other ones. I remember... I can't remember if it was San Jose or in Buffalo that we were in Vancouver, went out to dinner that night, a couple wobblies, and came back to the hotel, went into the hotel, went into the lobby, went into the elevator. They're such high-end hotels that you have to stick your key in to allow you to get up to your room. You remember
in
that?
The elevator,
at a certain time of night? Well, I'm sticking my key in, and the thing's not working. I'm like, what is going on here? I go up to the front desk. And I say, can I get another room key for my room? We don't have you. You're not in the, we don't have, I'm like thinking to myself, man, I don't even know what hotel I'm staying at. I had to go back and check other hotels to see if I can get, and then finally I got to my third hotel and realized that my key worked to get me upstairs to my room. It was absolutely legendary.
A couple? You only had a couple?
You had more than two. Wobbly pots. You had a few.
I love how
this is a PG-13 show here.
There's no PG. You had a dozen as an appetizer.
You had a bad piece of sushi and too many wobblies.
It's not true. God. It's amazing when you've been in the league for so long. You don't even know what city you're in half the time.
A couple guys that haven't been in the league very long. Instigators, Andrew Peters, Craig Rivet, WGR 550, and MSG. Marty's here. It's Friday. Darren Dreger at 11:30. And Sabres made a deal yesterday. Boys, sorry to change. So two guys that aren't in the NHL very often, or haven't been in the NHL very long.
I'm super happy.
Justin Bailey for Taylor
Lyre,
from the Philadelphia Flyers. So.
2017 All-Star MVP for the game. So
the first thing I saw when they said he was the All-Star MVP was
John Scott.
Doesn't mean anything.
Okay, doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. And listen, this is... He had a nice game. Listen, it's the All-Star game. And the AHL All-Star game used to be where guys you want to prove to the scouts and to their NHL affiliates that they are ready for prime time. When I played in it in 99, we were all like, let's go. And the game was actually tight, checking, hitting type game. It's not like that anymore, but... So this is a trade, basically, that allows the Rochester Americans to, again, acquire a player that maybe fits their mentality, their approach to the game, Jason Botterill. I mean, it's not a trade that will go down in history.
Can you also say that I think Jason Botterill is a very fair man that understands that Justin Bailey, who, you know, in his first, his second, his third year in the National Hockey League, had opportunities and stints of playing in the NHL and didn't played very well at times and other times not so much, but it's an opportunity for Justin
Bailey.
It's
a change of scenery for both guys. I mean, exactly, you know, they're like their time there, and it happens. I mean, this kid was a fourth round pick, probably not going to, you know, move up the depth chart and not getting much chance. And you probably before their time runs out, they want to get a chance to maybe have a fresh start somewhere else. Simple as that. I'm happy for Bailey, and I'm happy that this kid gets to come to a new team too and be used differently, seen differently, maybe more appreciated,
more opportunity.
Like you,
right?
You get to a point at this point in your career where Bailey couldn't have been feeling appreciated by the Sabres, and vice versa with this same kid here. I mean,
he's the Sabres brought in so many new faces now. So you're talking about Olofsson, C.J. Smith, and then you see Baptiste getting traded to Nashville, and now you're Bailey, and you're thinking, I'm part of the old regime, and all these new guys are coming in. I don't get the same role or the same looks that I used to. This is definitely a fair trade when you look at the Sabres and saying to Bailey, hey, go in and try to get something, a spark going with a different organization. The one thing, though, about this Taylor Lyre. How do you say it?
Lyre.
And I don't know much about him. And you guys had
we talked to Chris Baker
before the show and get a little bit on him. But he was with the Flyers on the roster for the whole season last year. So this was a situation where the Flyers did not want to put him on waivers to send him down to the American League because they thought he was going to get picked up on waivers, and they were going to lose him. So he had some value to the Flyers and their organization that he played 39 games last year, but stayed the whole year up with the team and never was sent to the minors. That, to me, says a lot about what the Flyers thought of the young man, especially that season.
Yeah, so he's going to be – now, will he report to Rochester, or will he come right to Buffalo? He'll go right to Rochester. So let me ask you this before we get to another trade that happened, and then the game tonight in Vancouver. It's 10 o'clock, 9:30 pregame show, games on MSG, Marty and Duffer at 9:30. Sabres after dark, and we have high expectations for this game tonight. No Elias Pettersson, but we'll talk about that. But there has to be a point where, you know, Jason Botterill is thinking about a Calder Cup in Rochester or a long playoff run for the Amerks. I mean, like, they have a pretty good team down there right now, and like, you get guys back. We were talking, as I mentioned, to Chris Baker before the show, just getting a scouting report on this kid. He had some great years in junior, by the way. Played on a great team there in Portland. But you think that has to be important, because before Pittsburgh started winning, Wilkes-Barre was always successful. I mean, they were always, you know, I know they have Crosby and Malkin, those guys, but you have to develop the other players around them too.
Detroit and Grand Rapids.
Great example.
You know, for years.
Great example.
Rochester and Buffalo.
Toronto.
Well, Toronto and Toronto, Rochester and Buffalo in the late 90s, you know, and that was that was a precursor to
you guys had some great runs in the Calder Cup.
Ended up having. And last year was supposed to be the year where Rochester were going to take a step forward in the playoffs, and they were really getting ready for a playoff run, and it didn't happen. They hit a wall at the end of the season, and they hit a wall in the playoffs. So now, with Jason Botterill and the Sabres and Chris Taylor and the whole group in Rochester is hoping that this season would be one of those that, I mean, there's some top teams. I mean, Charlotte is pretty good. Bridgeport's all right, but, you know, Rochester is hanging around there. They had a really good start, but they're hanging around in that pack right now in the top teams in the AHL, and they need to be able to continue that.
Another trade that happened yesterday around the NHL: Hurricanes acquired Nino Niederreiter.
Can you spell Niederreiter?
Can I? I'll give it a shot. Niederreiter. I don't know how the hell you spell
it. You were almost there.
I two R's. Okay, well, whatever. So Niederreiter from the Wild, and for Victor Rask. So
can you spell Rask?
I can spell Rask. So this is a guy that I think we've talked about. We've talked about Nino Niederreiter,
yes.
And Carolina is needed to add a forward that can score, and I think Niederreiter is that guy. Riv, we've talked about this guy a bunch of times. You know, he's the kind of guy that you'd love to see the Sabres go after. Now, I'm not saying that, that they missed the boat on this, because I don't know what the deal, when the deal happened or anything, but you have a Victor Rask, who's a pretty good player. He's a centerman, second-round pick. He's had, averages about 40 points a year, and, you know, Niederreiter, a good scoring winger. So, I mean, it's a one-for-one trade, and you have Minnesota shedding probably about another $1.25 in million in salary. So, I mean, I don't know if there's a winner or a loser. It's a,
another player, but, that was drafted fifth overall. Like, what is with all of these
and the
top
Islanders,
five, top seven picks in the NHL? They're all getting traded because they haven't panned out to what they should be. Niederreiter is a great, great power. I would say kind of not really a power forward, but he's certainly going to play physical. The last couple years, he's had some nice seasons at 24, 20, 25 goals. Last year, he had 18 and 63, so he was on pace for 25 goals. This year, very much the same. He's kind of on pace for a 20 goal season again. He's a 40 point player, but you know, he's making a more of a hefty salary that he just signed. He's making what, 5.1 or $5.2 million dollars. So, I mean,
I don't know if the
and that's exactly what Carolina's been looking for. They've been looking for a winger, a forward that can come in and that can help with some of the offense. I think Niederreiter is a really, we've talked about him a lot the last couple months. He's definitely like interesting.
Well, he was talked about last year, wasn't he? Wasn't he talked about last year being moved? And
before his contract signing.
So here's the thing. Niederreiter was drafted by the New York Islanders, and they gave up really quickly on him.
Really
early. And they just kind of pushed him up as an 18-year-old, a Swiss player that, you know, had a lot of upside, plays a poor forward type game, and the Islanders just tried him really young, didn't work, and moved on from there. I really like Niederreiter, El Nino, whatever you want to call him. I think he's really good. Now, I really like Victor Rask as well, the last couple of years in Carolina. And Carolina's having this change of heart on a lot of players. The Sabres were able to get Skinner for not a whole lot. Victor Rask, I was looking at his stats, and I'm like, something happened to him because he's only got one goal this year. And then when we came in this morning, we talked about he missed a lot of time early in the season. Well, I just looked back, and I forgot that story. He had a hand surgery in September this year, a cooking accident at home that him off for the better part of the first 20, 25 games. He must have sliced himself or something, had to have a hand surgery, and missed a lot of time. So he missed training camp, missed the better part of the season, and now is thrown into the season kind of behind a little bit. And the Carolina Hurricanes are not going to wait around for players to just get their legs going. If they don't see a fit, they trade them. Well, there he goes.
You know, he's definitely not producing to what he was, but I guess Minnesota must have him pegged a lot higher than obviously Carolina did. He's had 45 points, 48 points last year, drop-off year. He had 71 games. He had 31 points, but add some set. Have you seen Minnesota's depth at center?
But are you looking?
Like, is Minnesota? What, am I
are
looking
you at looking at this and saying that Minnesota wants to make this move because they need to lower their salary cap? Like, there's a little over $1 million difference between Rask and
it was because of that. I said they're able to just shed $1.25 million in salary cap. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying it's a salary cap dump by any means. I'm just saying that in the grand scheme of things, they don't pay nearly as much. I mean, $1.25 million, that's a fourth line guy. But have you seen Minnesota's depth at center? Between Mikko Koivu, Eric Staal, Charlie Coyle. You look at the Western Conference and the standings and how tight it is. You know, you have Vancouver tonight, Sabres in Vancouver tonight. I mean, no Elias Pettersson, a hungry team. This is a hungry team tonight. And I just, you know, the Sabres coming off a huge win against Calgary. Marty, we haven't asked you about that game.
Do you fire away?
What do you like about that game?
What I like about the game, it's funny because I didn't think the Sabres played a really good game. I think they battled hard. I think they clung and hung on and were like, let's not let them out of our sight, right?
Because sloppy turnovers.
Oh, you and I were texting. Like, so I was really like happy, number one, that you were texting me during the game. And you said to me, like, the Sabres are turning the puck over way too many times, especially in the neutral zone. What's going on there? Then I send you a picture of my notes. I had just written that down like a minute before you texted me. So that was funny. Jack did not have the greatest of game. Like, his passing was a little off.
It was certainly not from the work ethic, though. But Jack was absolutely flying, and he was working, and he was trying to make things happen. But there were some uncharacteristic plays where Jack would sprint to the boards and try and make a very quick play, and he was doing backhand passes where there were, you know, not, there were seeing eye passes where you didn't know where the man was, but you think that that's where he is, and he missed multiple passes like that. Passes coming off his stick, bobbling off his stick. It was uncharacteristic, like, and that was just Jack.
I mean, at Linus Ullmark. It was not a clean game for Ullmark at all.
No.
He made some mistakes. He was flopping all over the place. It was a sloppy type. But his effort was there.
Yeah.
And I think for the whole Sabres, their effort was there, and they were able to just buy a little bit of time. And, oh, we got a break. And all of a sudden, Dahlin shoots it, and it goes off of, was it Frolik's stick? And then it went into the
top
net.
Shelf,
and then it went top shelf. And then McCabe shoots it after one of the defense for Calgary made a bad turnover and sent it down the middle. It ends up to McCabe. Oposo's in front of the net. It's in the back of the net. It was one of those where the Sabres didn't need a lot of opportunities. They just were able to work their way into getting a win, and it was nice. And Jack's reaction after he scored the overtime goal says it all. Like, it was you press that button, and it just, the steam comes out of the ears and the nose, and it releases all that negative energy out of your system. So I'm excited to see what the Sabres are going to do in Vancouver tonight for that reason, because the same can be said for when the Sabres score. It seems like they've given up a lot of goals in the next minute or two. And Paul Hamilton has that stat 18 times this
18
year
times.
Within 2 minutes, and it happened again in Calgary. We've seen this year when the Sabres get a big win, the very next game, they don't really follow through on that. So getting that win before the break in Vancouver tonight is, to me,
well, there's no question that this team right here in Vancouver, they're missing their best player in Elias Pettersson, who has 22 goals and 42 points. He is, without question, their most skilled, their leading scorer. So what happens when this happens? You take a Pettersson, a left winger that comes out, and everybody else moves up the depth chart. So you have an Antoine Roussel that Petey and I have talked about that we really like, who is just a nasty water bug that is just going to come at you. He's a pest. And Tim Schaller is going to move up, who's defensively responsible, hard to play against, going to be physical. I mean, it's not going to be easier. It's going to be just a different type of game.
10 o'clock, 9:30 pregame show on MSG. As Riv mentioned, no Elias Pettersson. Will we have Nate Beaulieu in the lineup? And that's a question. And, you know, obviously he had some comments yesterday about, you know, the agent's statements about, and his biggest thing is, I'm going to make it pretty clear, I just want to play. That's the biggest thing for me, is just playing. I'm 26 years old, and I feel like I'm still developing. I just want to be out there, and that's Nathan Beaulieu. So curious to know if we see him, and you think he gets moved anytime soon?
I don't think he gets moved anytime soon. I think there's going to be a conversation, obviously, and Jason Pottrell's not the type of general manager that's going to say, okay, let's trade for a fifth-round pick and just to move. I think there's going to be some thinking behind it, some conversation. I can see where Nathan Beaulieu was frustrated after the Edmonton game that he wasn't going to play against Calgary, because he was out with, what, 6-7 games? He hadn't played yet in 2019. He plays one game in Edmonton, and he didn't play all that bad. Mm. You know, it's a 7-2 game.
Pairing struggled immensely.
Well, it wasn't all on Nathan Beaulieu.
No, the majority of it was his partner, but he was still he still made some mistakes in that game.
But I'm saying, I'm giving him a pass, because I'm saying this is your first game back in a while, and it's not been a good game for everybody. He probably wasn't my choice for player to come out of the lineup to insert Lawrence Pilot, but the decision was made, and Phil made the decision, and I can see where Nathan Beaulieu would be frustrated.
Well, who else do you take out? I mean,
for me, I'll tell you what I would have done. I would have taken out Marco for one game. I would have taken out Marcos Candela for one game, knowing and having the conversation with Marcos Candela, listen, I have to sit you out. It was as bad a game as I've ever seen you play. You'll come back in, probably in Vancouver, but I have no choice but to sit you out. And so I would have done that because I would have given Nathan Beaulieu the benefit of the doubt, putting Pilot back in. And listen, Scandella responded and played pretty well against Calgary. So,
yes, he did.
So good on Phil Housley to keep Scandella in. Good on Scandella to play well. That's great. But I can totally see how Beaulieu is a little frustrated and wants to play. He's had a good year so far.
You know what? It's tough. It's tough when you have – so every team has their 1 through 6, okay? And those are considered your starters. But where you get into trouble is when your 5 and 6 are very close to your 7, okay?
Yeah.
And 7 wants to play. And when 7 comes in – like a Beaulieu, who I think has actually played quite well when he's been in. He's been physical. He's added some offense. He's, you know, he can skate. I think he's had a solid season so far. And he's sitting there going, I'm 20, 25, just turned 26. I want to play. I'm still developing as a player. I totally get where he's coming from. But when you have that 7 players, 8 players, it makes things difficult because you have to try and keep guys in and out, put guys in the lineup so they stay sharp.
And if he doesn't play now, when Casey Nelson comes back, he's going to be Nathan Beaulieu's going to be moved down the lineup even more.
I think he will be moved. I do believe that he will be moved because I think the Sabres have their 6, and when Casey Nelson comes back, he is going to be probably in their 7, and you still have Matt Hunwick who's sitting there saying, you know, I'm going to practice hard. He's an older player. He's a true professional, and he's going to wait for his opportunity. So they're going to have a lot of players.
All right, when we come back, we're going to go into more debating around the league, to the point presented by Jim Stakeout, Dis or Dat, coming up after that. And don't forget, Darren Dreger at 1130 TSN Hockey Insider. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he's at Darren Dreger. We'll be right back. Instigators, WGR 550 and MSG.
We're back with more of the Instigators with Andrew Peters and Craig Rabe.
All right, welcome back. Had a nightmare. You guys want to hear about it?
Sure.
I had a dream that you and I were interviewing 2 bandits, and I called one of them by the wrong name.
Yeah?
I had a dream that you had 2 bandits on the show, and you told them that you had 275 on the bar and was, like, pumping the chest.
No, whatever. I wasn't. I didn't. I was impersonating their goalie when he was younger, and
but
I saw him.
But you said, I was there at the gym, and I had 275 up, and this guy came in and did about 12, 13, 14 easy.
Yeah. I did. I had 275 at some point became about a warm-up for me. Later 20s.
I love how he's saying that.
Dead serious. I could lie under a bar. I could have thrown up 220. I probably did. I maxed out, you know, if you want, like, brag. I mean,
what's one plate?
135.
There you go, River. So, River knows what I did. Hey, River knows.
That was my test at training camp. See how many you can do with 135.
Al Kotalik and I went at it. 205 on the bar. We went at it. That's a 45 and a 35 on each side. We went at it. I had 28. I think he had 29.
Well, Al's a big guy.
Al was. But that last one, Al, 205 pounds.
You have longer arms, though.
Al's like this, like on the last one. He had the gloves on and everything. You remember he used to wear the gloves in the gym?
The cut-off fingers. He was gym guy. Gym guy.
Al would walk around in spandex and like a shirt that was like cut off. Like you were working out at Muscle Beach.
Did he have a workout bandana on, too?
Oh, guy, he was one of the best. You like hockey, Petey? Petey, you like hockey? That's what he used to say to me. Anyway, that's it. So I had that nightmare. But then I realized that really happened. So anyway, what are we doing now? To the Point, presented by Jim Stakeout. Marty's typing away over there. Let's get to the point. And first topic, to the point. Did you guys watch any hockey last night?
A little bit.
Yeah, did you watch any of that Toronto-Tampa game?
I watched some of that, and then I watched a little Dallas. LA.
I didn't. Well, I shut off the after Toronto Tampa. I shut her down. But Nazem Kadri, this is going to be one of those games where it swings you in the right direction and brings momentum back on your side. We knew we needed to have a response, and I'm proud of our group. So they beat the Lightning last night. So how important was the Leafs' win over the Lightning? Because the Lightning are running away with the division, running away with it,
running away with
the conference.
They're running away with the league. Yeah, just like Marty. Marty said, you know, listen. I mean, it's a bit. It's not a big deal for the Tampa Bay Lightning, but it is a big deal for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They have not played well. They've been in a funk. They haven't been able to score. There's no way that should happen with the amount of talent and what they have, the leadership that they have in Toronto. So this is a big win for them. I'm sure they're going to try and take pieces of this where they can really build off it and gain some confidence. But this means not a whole lot to the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're still a machine.
This could be a good second-round matchup.
It will be.
Yeah, it probably will be. You know what?
Boston.
Toronto fans are nervous with Boston. Marty, go ahead. How important was Leafs win over Lightning?
It was important, but not for the reason I think everybody believes. So everybody's looking at this like, well, the Leafs beat the top team, and this will be a matchup, and it's good for the Leafs to be able to establish that they can beat the Lightning in the regular season because when they get in the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. Well, for me, it's more the fact that, look, if you're the Leafs and you were sitting at 58 points before last night, and you have Montreal that was at 57, Pittsburgh 56, Buffalo 54, you better get some points because teams are going to start catching up to you. You're not played well at all. You have so many guys on long scoring droughts. You need to win. So not so much for beating Tampa, just the fact that they were able to get 2 points and push a little forward. In the race.
Little side question here. Are the Leafs for real? Do they have a roster right now, or is there a deal that they need to make?
They need to get a defenseman. I think they need a defenseman, a shutdown-type defenseman. They have Ron Hainsey, but Hainsey is just a little older now. But they need a defenseman.
Leafs don't want to play Boston again. I can tell you that much.
No.
I just find it very interesting, the situation that the Toronto Maple Leafs are in. I mean, they're not in a great situation. They're looking at, are we a team that is definitely going for the Stanley Cup? They have, they're going to have major, major cap issues coming up very, very soon, where everybody knew an Austin Matthews was going to be garnering upwards of $12.5 million, maybe even more. But now you have a player on that team in Mitch Marner, which I think they were thinking that he was going to be in the $7-8 million range. Well, now he's bolstered himself into, he's got to be 10 plus. He has played absolutely exceptional hockey. And, you know, they're in a mode that they're going to, what are they going to do with Gardner on defense, who's logging more minutes than any defenseman on the team? Like they need, he's an unrestricted free agent, but do you trade him or do you say that we're going for the Stanley Cup? We are going to bring in instead of subtracting.
Okay. So yesterday there was a trade, Nino Niederreiter going from Minnesota to Carolina and Victor Rask going from Carolina to Minnesota. Hurricanes still hope to go out and get another top six forward before the February 25th. They want to use a D-man to do it. So to the point, Marty, you're up. Will the Hurricanes be able to acquire another top six forward?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think the Hurricanes are going to look to do anything and everything possible to get another player, maybe two, maybe even add a defenseman. They've got some pieces to play around with. And listen, this owner and this group in Carolina is not going to sit by. So, Niederreiter is a good piece for them. It makes me a little nervous because Carolina was coming into rounding into shape of late, and they added a good player, so it makes them even more a threat for a playoff spot. But I think they are going to acquire more at the deadline because, unlike the Sabres, they're not sitting pat. The Carolina Hurricanes are going to get better in a month or so.
Will the Hurricanes be able to acquire another top six forward? Old Man River, you're up.
Well, I think they're certainly going to try. I think this is what's been, nagging the Hurricanes is their lack of ability to score. They need more offense. They need more talent. You go and look at their salary cap. They're the lowest team in the league for what they've put into their team so far. So they're going to have lots of cap space, and they don't have any player on long-term contracts on the forward line except for the guy they just acquired in Nina Niederreiter. So this is they've got a lot of options here in Carolina. It's going to be interesting to see what they do, but I think that they will try and acquire somebody.
All right, so moving out west, we're trying to give you a little to-the-point all the way around the NHL because the Sabres are playing in the west this road trip, and I don't feel like enough people know about what's going on in the west. It's a tight squeeze over there. So you have Winnipeg up near the top. They're at the top. You have Calgary at the top, which I think a lot of people didn't see happening at the start of the year. If you did, raise your hand, but I'm not going to buy it. But is Winnipeg the team to beat in the West? I feel like they were the favorite. And I got to say this. I feel like Ken Campbell, Marty, a couple years ago said the 2019 Stanley Cup champions will be the Winnipeg Jets.
That was on the Hockey News. Like, they have their cover like 4 years in advance, and they say, here is your 2019 yeah. Stanley Cup champion.
It's amazing how we remember that stuff. That's a bold prediction, Cotton.
I want to say it was last year, though. It said the 2018 NHL champs. And maybe it was this year. Anyway, yes, regardless, I'm going to go to
Winnipeg
the point
the
here.
Team to beat in the West?
Yes, Winnipeg is the team to beat. Listen, they beat the Vegas Golden Knights with Laurent Brossoit in net a couple of games ago. So Paul Maurice is like, and Brossoit is, I think, 11-1-1 this season, something crazy like that as a backup. Connor Hellebuck has had a up and down year, but played really well last night against Nashville. And this was the matchup. You know, you talked Toronto, Tampa, but this matchup, Winnipeg Nashville, was great. And Winnipeg getting a 5-1 win just definitely made them the clear cut top of the Western Conference for me.
All right, River, is Winnipeg the team? I think I know where you're going. Are they the team to beat in the West? Don't
clear cut, Marty? Don't think so. Certainly not clear cut. Are they one of the big boys in the West? Absolutely. But right now, the Calgary Flames have emerged as one of the top in the league. You look at their goals against. You look at how much they're scoring on offense. They've got all the ingredients. They're very similar to a Winnipeg Jets. I think Calgary and Winnipeg, and we certainly cannot forget the Nashville Predators that have had an injury-riddled season with a lot of their top-end players. Once they get those players back, put Nashville Predators back in everyone's thoughts.
Ottawa Senators, no first-round draft pick. They lost it in the – or I shouldn't say they lost it, but technically I think they lost it. They gave it away in the Matt Duchene trade to Colorado. So what does the future hold for Duchene and Stone in Ottawa? Because if Ottawa's looking to acquire a first-round pick in this year's draft, one of those two players might be able to get it for you.
Oh, yeah, they may be able to fetch – first-round pick, but I do believe that the Ottawa Senators are going to try to re-sign both of them.
Really?
And I know there's some word out there. I think they're definitely going to try to re-sign Matt Duchene. I think they're going to give everything they can. They're a budget team in Ottawa, but Duchene's been really good for them. And you imagine if you trade him now and you traded your first-round pick, which would be a first overall, and nothing pans out of it.
You almost have to sign him to save face.
You almost have to do it. You almost have to just say, I'm just going to do it.
The trade worked out. We love him. We're going to keep him.
At least you know what you're getting, right? Yeah. It's what are you going to get? Like, if you trade him to a contender and they go to the conference final and you get the 27th overall pick this year, I mean, it could be a crapshoot right there.
What does the future hold for Duchene and Stone in Ottawa, River?
Yeah, I agree with Marty that you know, Mark Stone is only 26 years old. He's a fantastic hockey player. He's produced over a point a game for the last couple years. He is a big boy hockey player, and you have to have some star-studded talent. Even if you're going through a transition, you still have to have some big boy hockey players on your team to keep your head above water. I think they will try and sign Mark Stone, and I also think if they don't sign Matt Duchene, I mean, Ottawa fans are literally going to lose their marbles with what was given up to get Matt Duchene, and now all of a sudden he just leaves. I mean, they're going to be absolutely furious. So they're going to have to try and sign both those two players.
We are doing To the Point presented by Jim Stakeout. Final topic. Why is Maroon fighting Chara again? I don't know if you saw this. You know, Maroon running around 0-0 in the game at the time, you know, late in the first period. You just see the two of them get tangled up. Marty, I'll start with you. Why is Maroon fighting with Zdeno Chara?
According to Pat Maroon, because his interview with Darren Pang after the game was, Zdeno Chara respects me, I respect him, and it's not easy and it's not fun to do it, but I have to do what I think is best for my team. And I keep asking myself, is that what's best for your team? Like, I understand that Chara is a good defenseman, but what is taking him out for 5 minutes? He's not 28 years old. He's 41, going on 42. How old is he? Like, I mean, this to me is, I don't get it. Is that going to fire up the St. Louis Blues?
River, is that going to fire up the St. Louis Blues? Why is Maroon fighting with Chara? Again.
Listen, I mean, Zdeno Chara has respect everybody everywhere around this league. I think Patrick Maroon has been in a situation since he's come to St. Louis. It has not worked out the way planned. He's been a healthy scratch. His minutes have gone down. He is trying to do what it takes because of that big body he has to try and add some physicality and some credibility to the St. Louis Blues. And I think that he did something that his teammates will absolutely look at him and say, great job there, and see if they can continue to build. It's not just one incident. It's just knowing that you have Patrick Maroon on the ice that's willing to do that.
Maybe it's more trying to impress your coach, because Craig Berube was a tough customer in the days, and he knows maybe the way to Craig Berube's heart is by going after the bigger guys.
You not think Craig Berube, who this St. Louis team, since he's taken over, that team has gotten better. Yep. And now they're only 4 points out of a playoff spot, where a couple weeks ago they were 8 points out. So they're really, clawing really back.
But does that make you win a game, the fact that you fight Zdeno Chara? I don't think that's
It's gaining confidence with your teammates. It's gaining confidence with your coaching staff, and knowing that this guy's willing to do it, and that's a big part of it. So I like what he did.
Okay.
You asked a great question before the show. We were talking about this. We were watching the fight about, do you think we'll ever see a defenseman like Chara again? Like, he is.
I think that he's, you know, listen, I mean, he did win a Norris or two, maybe one, but he's literally been in the Norris Trophy, race for years and years. He's obviously, he's 40, 41 years old right now. His years, prime years are way past him. But when he was in his prime in those 10 years, he was always in the race for a Norris Trophy. I think he is one of the greatest defensemen that will ever play, not because he's Bobby Orr or Erik Karlsson or a player like that, but he was the hardest player to play against in his prime of his career. And he's still tough to play against at 40. He's 6'9", and he's 160 pounds. It is, I mean, will we ever see another defenseman like him? Because he's not just a meathead. He was a guy that was, he was power play, penalty kill, playing 28 minutes a game, physical, fight. He did everything. He was the ultimate defenseman.
I got to talk to him in the hallway and the bridge going from the KeyBank Center to the Harbor Center parking ramp, right? So I was leaving the other morning when Boston was here. I talked to him for like 5 minutes. He's the nicest guy. I mean, he's a smart, nice,
gentle giant.
But
he is nasty.
I would want him nasty. You talk about it. He was nasty when he's in the American.
He's a workout fiend too.
This or that coming up next year on the Instigators after the break, 11:30. Don't forget TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger is going to join us at Darren Dreger on Twitter, 11:30 every Friday. Look forward to that. We'll be right back. This or that coming up next with Marty Biron, WGR 550 and MSG.
Welcome back to the Instigators. It is Friday. The Sabres play tonight at Vancouver, the last game before the bye week and the All-Star break. Their next game will be in, 10 days in Columbus, I believe it is. But anyway, let's have a little this or that action here this morning, boys. I've got a few on the docket here, and so we can go pretty quick on these. Lundqvist last night, the beautiful man, my friend, Henrik Hank Lundqvist. Tied Terry Sawchuk for most wins in the tied Terry Sawchuk for wins in the National Hockey League at 445 when the Rangers beat the Blackhawks last night. And we know that Roberto Luongo is like third in the National Hockey League in wins. Lundqvist is not there yet, but I'm asking you, who's had the better career, the King or Bobby Lou?
Exactly the same.
That they is both, not a diss or
they
that.
Both won Olympic gold. And
yeah, they did.
They've never won a cup. They're legendary. They're Hall
Lundqvist
of Famers.
Lundqvist has got a Vezina.
I'd say Lundqvist. I would say Lundqvist has had the better career.
Nice.
I'm not sure if you can. I mean, these two men have had absolutely fantastic careers. They've been the top of their field. Neither has won a Stanley Cup. come close, but yeah. I would probably say Bobby Lou just because did he not go to the finals?
Lundqvist did as well.
Lundqvist went to the finals and lost to LA.
Then I there's no way I could. There's no way
you gotta
I could
go. You gotta go with the runway model.
I'm going or. I cannot do this or that.
Or that.
Out of respect for both these men and their careers and the longevity of their careers, I cannot pick either one. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, how about this one? Tuukka Rask, with his 252nd NHL win last night, tied Tiny Thompson for wins with the Bruins. So I'm asking you this.
Tiny.
I'm asking you this. Oh. Best goalie nickname, Tiny Thompson or Gump Worsley? Because they're not. I think one is. I had pulled it up. I don't know where it is now. But Tiny's real name was actually. Here it is. Cecil Ralph Thompson, also known as Tiny. And Gump was. Gump Worsley, I have it right here. You guys talk, but Lorne John Worsley. So best goalie nickname, Tiny or Gump?
Well, I know why they're, you know, Cecil and what? Cecil and Lorne. No wonder they're calling him Gumpy
and Tiny.
And Tiny. I'm going to go with the old Gumper, Gump okay. Worsley for sure.
Petey?
Gump.
Gump, eh? It's just...
I like
Forrest Gump. Gump. Bubba Gump. Shrimp Company. I mean...
There you go.
You can't go wrong with Gump. And Gump Worsley is definitely... has 330-some wins in the National Hockey League, so way up there. Okay, better matchup last night. We already touched on this. Toronto played at Tampa or Winnipeg at Nashville. What was the marquee matchup of the night last night?
Toronto-Tampa.
Really?
Yes.
It was a great game, better game, but was that the marquee matchup?
I think so. Tampa's the top dog in the league.
Tampa, Toronto, or who's my
Big
other
blue
one?
Machine turned it down.
Jets? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Toronto and Lightning. And you're just talking pure fun factor. I mean, Tampa Bay Lightning is the best team in the National Hockey League. There's no denying that.
Yeah.
Number two, probably one of the most exciting teams to watch because of how much star-studded talents they have are the Leafs. So 100% it's going to be Leafs Lightning.
Okay. Well, I thought there was going to be a little bit of love for Winnipeg and Nashville here, but I guess not. So we'll move on right away.
Moving on.
John Shannon, Sportsnet, put a tweet a couple of days ago that basically showed the playoffs if you had the 116 in the National Hockey League. Just take the first place in the National Hockey League, play the 16th place, and it looked different than if you have 1 through 8 in each conference. The Buffalo Sabres, who are not in a playoff spot right now, if you're looking at the top 8 in the Eastern Conference, would be if it was 1 through 16. So, just for the fun of it, I know where I stand on this, but because the Sabres would be in a better position if it was a league-wide playoff format, should we change the playoff format or should we keep it the same? This or that, 1-16 or 1 through 8 in each conference?
1-16 would be absolutely crazy because you have Buffalo playing San Jose. Like, have fun with the travel, boys. You know,
you have
the time
Winnipeg,
change.
Winnipeg, Pittsburgh, Vegas,
yeah.
Montreal.
Yeah, 7-game series. I mean, guys are going to be out of gas.
Yeah, well, you would have you would have Tampa Bay, Dallas. That's a Sun Belt type of meeting there.
I don't like either of these, but if I have to pick one, I'll say 1 through 16 because I think it would be absolutely amazing to see the West play the East, but... I have no time for 1 through 8. If you're going to do 1 through 8, do the divisions and let's create some real rivalries. We've had this discussion a
million
times.
Top 4 in each division.
Top 4 in each division.
I agree. Ribs, 1-16 or 1 through 8?
I don't know. I'm exhausted talking about this topic. It comes up all the time.
Well, it has to be fixed. There has to be something they can do better than the wild card. The wild card is nonsense.
Yeah, I think they should do it by conference first and 1 would play 8. 2
just
would play 7.
Straight up?
Yep. 3 would play 6. Very simple.
Okay, well, before we go to break, one quick last
one. Like
right now,
with what we have, is we have two of the top, like, last year, who'd they have? Columbus and Pittsburgh play in the first round?
Yeah,
they were number 2 and number 3 in the National Hockey League. Does that make sense?
Well,
I'm like, just, way to go, Gary.
It just,
you know
it's
what?
Not Gary's fault.
Oh, okay,
stop blaming Gary.
Come on.
Last, quickly, two movies coming up that I'm really excited about, Ghostbusters 2020 or Coming to America 2. Which one, if you could only go and see one, would you go see?
Well, Coming to America, what's that one?
Eddie Murphy, the prince, he comes
oh,
and
yeah,
lives
yeah.
in Queens
okay,
and
gotcha.
Looks for a wife.
Gotcha.
And So, and the McDowell's family. Is that McDowell's?
Yep, that's McDowell.
Yeah, so, or Ghostbusters.
They have the Big Mac. We have the Big Mick.
The Big Mick. Yeah. So, which one would you pick? Ghostbusters or Coming to America?
Ghostbusters is one of my favorite movies of all time. It goes all the way back to my childhood. I had the toys. I had everything. No Egon. He may rest in peace, but Ghostbusters.
Okay.
I'm happy you said that. I think Ghostbusters was way overrated. I didn't really like the movie when I was a kid, but I loved Coming to America with Eddie Murphy. Definitely going Coming to America.
Were you afraid of ghosts when you were a kid? Don't you feel comfortable knowing
that? Was it Arsenio Hall that was with Eddie Murphy in that movie that gets the whole apartment?
It's a hilarious movie. Yeah. Oh, it's hilarious.
Awesome.
Oh, it's amazing.
I'm going with Coming to America just because... it's been so long since I've seen the original one that I'm going to watch the original one now just to get ready for the second one.
Yeah,
but anyway,
I like that.
We got Petey's update coming up. We are way late for the break. So second hour, we'll have Darren Dreger at 11:30. And we have...
game preview.
Buy, sell, trade as well, right?
Yep. And game preview coming up.
We'll see you in just a couple minutes here on The Instigator, WGR 550 and MSG.